Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we're joined today by Jesse Oliver.
Hello.
How are you today?
Oh, I am doing well. Glad to have you here. Thank you for coming to me.
No problem.
Yeah, so we are not in our normal spot. We are actually at Jesse's apartment because are you like super allergic to cats?
Oh yeah, like my eyes start to like fold over on themselves and I look like a baby mole rat and like I'm like it's that kind of like desperate for air gasping cat allergy.
Well then I'm glad that this worked out.
Me too. No, I love having a reason to come over to like brown line life.
Because we're like pretty solidly red line life.
Well, I think we're like as secluded as you can be red line life because we're like in Andersonville. Which is similar to brown line, but there's something miraculously like not like but separate and kind of about the brown line. And maybe that's just my imposed idea of what brown line is like.
I mean, the brown line is I guess because I went to school, I went to college at North Park. And I went to high school at the Chicago Academy for the Arts, which is pretty close to the Franklin, Chicago brown line spot. It's sort of always been a part of my life.
Gotcha. Did you grow up in Chicago?
I grew up in a little bit of everywhere.
Cool.
I mean, primarily in Chicago and the Chicago suburbs, but like we moved around a lot. And so, but I finished high school in Chicago. And then went to college in Chicago.
Cool.
In fact, we were joking. I was like, I really miss 1997 Chicago because it feels to me, moving back here a couple years ago was sort of a shock to my system because there was a certain level of grit in Chicago that no longer is present, right? Like,
interesting.
Like that you see new facades on buildings and everything is getting developed and it doesn't matter what neighborhood you're in. It's not just like historical neighborhoods of for people of color like Humboldt Park or you know, like it's happening in
Hyde Park is crazy white now.
Even like I don't know if you saw the stories about the Brauhaus is going to be sold at some point.
I saw that.
Like
yeah.
It's and you know it's just going to get replaced
by like a gastropub or some dumb shit.
Gentrification
like that
is just everywhere in this city.
So my aunt, she lives down the block from us in Andersonville. She bought a condo in I think 2000 on Carmen and Clark. I think that she paid like $120,000 for her two bedroom condo in that prime ass location. And I think that like if she were to resell her condo, it would be for like $300 like
this is very similar to like my best friends in high school. So I lived in Westtown over on like Chicago and Walcott. And then my friend Lisa lived up at like Division and Polina. And then my other friends, Allie and Abra, had a house over on Hermitage and Wabansia. And their parents bought the house for under $100,000 at Hermitage and Wabansia, right?
Oh my God.
When her mom moved down to New Orleans, she sold it for over $1 million.
Yeah.
Because it was an actual house. But this is like, it was also nice, like I grew up in a situation for high school where we all lived within eight blocks. So like, I just would walk everywhere. But like Westtown when I was a kid was like not a great neighborhood, right? Yeah. Like I lived across the street from a used car lot that is now Westtown Tattoo. I'm like, every time I go down there, I'm like, this is just so weird to me. How did you become this? Like,
yeah, no, Westtown, like I can't even imagine living in Westtown because it would be so expensive.
Right? Or, like, all of those, like, fancy restaurants down, like, in Randolph, like, in West Loop. Like, that just used to be nothing. Like, just large blocks of nothingness. Or even, like, North and Clybourne, that area used to be nothing when I was a kid. Like, it's so weird. Wow. So I remember coming back, like, for one of the first times and being like, when did North and Clybourne become a mall? Like, this
is
a mall.
And
it used to be just, like, empty plots of land and warehouses. And I was like, this is so weird to me. Because it was, Allie and Abra's dad lived in a sculpture studio right off the Sedgwick Brown Line. So we would take the North Avenue bus back and forth to her parents' houses. And like, it was just nothing. And then all of a sudden, it just got super developed. And I mean, it's so weird. This is just not the city I grew up in.
Well, I mean, not to mention, like, the Wicker Park, Bucktown area.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That like, is that the place. Area that they were in, right? Like, yeah. And so, honestly, this sounds so, like, bougie, but it was the real world that changed that neighborhood. When the real world came into film there, everything, it had started to turn, but it was like hyperdrive after the real world came into Wicker Park.
I did not, how long ago? When was
that? That was like 96, 97, something like that, maybe 98.
Because real world's had like so many seasons.
Yeah.
Like 26 or something.
We were like, people, like our neighborhood friends, we would go and protest it because people were pissed. They're like, get the fuck out of our neighborhood. Because everyone knew that it would then become, it would go from being like an artist haven.
Yeah.
To like being...
what it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm starting a job at a cafe in Bucktown, and it's at like North and Damon.
Yeah.
And
a neighborhood has changed when it's got a Lush.
Right? Yeah. You know, like, no, I think we're like kitty corner from the Lush.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like very, I'm scared at how busy it's going to be, but also very excited for those bougie tips. Like, yes. That's going to be so good.
I mean, so as that neighborhood was turning and we were all still living there, we would like, when we would talk about the yuppie invasion, we proudly called ourselves yuffies, the young urban failures. We were like, oh no, we're yuffies. Yeah. I'm like, it was like 16, 17, 18 year old girls like shouting, like wearing t-shirts that said yuffie because we were like, so opposed to this neighborhood switch.
Oh my God.
And like change happens, right? Like I'm not naive enough to not recognize change happens. It's just that it's happening in a way that makes the city feel more like a suburb that has walkability.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. Like not in a way where like these old neighborhoods that like Pilsen is a fucking fantastic neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And that neighborhood now has that, what is that, Dusex place that like, it's like this nice bougie bar, but also like on the Day Without Immigrants, they fired a Mexican immigrant for not coming into work in Pilsen. What? And I was like, you need to fuck the fuck off. Like,
wow.
Yeah. And it's the same company that owns like Promontory and Longman and Eagle. And because it just becomes like ubiquitous development vomit. All yeah. over the city.
No, I worked at a place in Pilsen. The job I left and this new job, blah, blah, blah. The job I left for this new job, I worked for a coffee and tea distributor where they took over one of the warehouses in Pilsen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bunch of well-meaning white people just like at Carpenter and Cermak.
I mean, but, like, that in some regards is, like, just as dangerous, right?
No.
Like,
oh, I mean.
Outright microaggressive assholes who are like, oh, look at us, like.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and I mean, I agree with you. Oh, yes. It was, like, it's part of the reason that I left. Because yeah. I was like, this is a lot. And also, Pilsen was far from my apartment.
Yeah.
And it was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But.
You did it, though. You did a whole 5 months of Lakeshore commute in rush hour.
It fucking sucked. It really sucked so much.
From Andersonville to Pilsen.
But would you say it would take you 15 minutes? Isn't that the Chicago way? Oh, it's just 15 minutes. It's like 15 minutes across.
It's either 15 minutes or 3 hours.
Right.
And it usually
well,
it took
this
me like
is
an
actually,
hour.
I mean, fun fact. I'm going to do a star wipe that no one will see. Chicago does not have the worst traffic in the United States, but it does statistically have the most unreliable traffic in the United States.
Mm. Yeah.
That it there is no rhyme or reason for why some days it takes you 15 minutes to get somewhere and
that
why.
That is very true.
Like,
I don't need navigation to get around the city. Like, I can get from point A to point B without using navigation for the most part. But everywhere I go, I have navigation up just so I know when to
Waze,
get there.
Tell me how to get there the quickest. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that. I'm from Milwaukee. I don't have to do that in Milwaukee because everywhere it takes you 10 minutes. Like, yep. Regardless of traffic. It could be horrible traffic.
Can you riddle me a question?
Yeah.
Why does Milwaukee no longer smell like beer?
I know this question. So, there was a yeast there was a distillery there.
Okay.
And they had an offshoot, and the distilling process requires, it involves some, the byproduct is yeast. And so the distillery started a sister company called Red Star Yeast, which is like if you buy yeast, it's Red Star.
Great.
And so they were like, yeah, you know, as a side project, we'll just start Red Star Yeast. And so that's why around like the 27th Street area on the highway, it would smell like yeast.
Yeah, you would unroll your windows.
And you'd go.
And it was like Milwaukee was welcoming you.
Exactly, yes. Right. And I remember like growing up and like whenever I smell yeast, also because my dad used to brew beer at my house
naturally
on Sundays. So like the smell of yeast, I get like choked up because I'm like, it's home. But in 2005... a French company bought out Red Star and moved production elsewhere. So there wasn't any more yeast being cultivated.
All right. That is the answer.
That is why Milwaukee no longer smells like yeast.
I drove through Milwaukee not too long ago and was like, what happened?
I know. I know. I was so sad.
Yeah.
yeah. Well.
So.
Let's.
Well, I was going to say, the cool thing about this week, I love that whenever we get a week of themes, so I'm going to be the person that brings up themes and then let you guys talk. But the thing that's really cool is we've like spent a lot of time this week talking about Chicago and just kind of like as a city. So I'm really glad that we've just done that. And I also am really excited to segue into our next thing, which is we've been talking and we'll continue to kind of talk about this week, intersectionality more.
Yes.
Which is very exciting because like, you know, it's... I feel like it's easy right now in this cultural climate of just like fear and shock and like shock and awe politics, or not politics, but news cycle that we have going. It's really easy to kind of like let that fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, there's been, we've talked a bit about like the Women's March or like other things where you kind of feel like it's been to some perspectives, it's very blanketed, like how things are being handled. And I know that you are a very, really big supporter and advocate for like plus size rights and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Maureen is also really excited about.
Yeah.
About your project that you have that you're kind of working on.
Yeah.
Now. No, I saw your post on Facebook about wanting to start a plus size artists collective before we started this podcast. And I saw that and I was like, fuck yeah, that would be so goddamn cool. I would love that. And then we started this podcast and I was like going through people in my head that I knew I wanted to talk to. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, I want to talk to Jesse Oliver about that. Plus, so, and we had an awesome conversation about it on Facebook chat.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about like where you got this.
There are a couple of things. I mean, walking through the world in a fat body, you are constantly reminded that you are perceived as lesser than, and you are constantly reminded how much space your body is taking up, right? Whether people know they're doing it or not, like there's a lot of coded language with being plus size. There's a lot of microaggressions with being plus size. Mm. Like, I will never forget the day I walked into the Starbucks on Irving Park in Lincoln, and I was wearing a pair of shorts, and a woman was like, oh, those shorts are brave. And I was like,
ugh.
I actually, like, because I was like, control the rage, you're in public. I was like, no, they're just shorts, thank you. And like, I was like, I don't, like, what, how am I supposed to respond to that, right? Or like, things like, I'll be at a gym, not CrossFit, but, like, if I'm at, like, an LA Fitness or something, someone will walk up and be like, you're a real inspiration.
Oh, God damn it.
And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I'm like, I didn't get shot in the head. I'm not Malala. Like, yeah. I am just a fat girl doing a deadlift. Like, let's put things in perspective. Yeah. Yeah.
The idea of going through the world as a plus size woman being brave is like so beyond insulting to me because like I'm just trying to live my fucking life, man. Like,
right?
don't regard my existence as brave. Like,
well, because when they do that, they have already contextualized you as lesser than.
Exactly. Right?
Like, there's always that underlying thing that is being said to you that like, oh, you're not what society tells you you should be or what we want to see in society. So it's just brave that you can get yourself out of your house, that you managed to, like, extract yourself from your bed and, like, go about a life. You're like, uh-huh, yeah. Like,
it's the, they're like, oh, Gilbert, great, oh, shit, that John Irving book.
What's Eating Gilbert
Grape? Yeah, What's Eating Gilbert Grape? Like, how are you not, like, oh my God, you're like, fat. How are you not just in your bed? And should we just set your house on fire? Like, no, man!
I mean, but it's also like, what do you think the psyche of the average fat person is? Because that only exists because we're fed and sold the narrative that we should be unhappy and not proud of who we are, yeah. Right? So, like, the only reason people think that is because when we talk about what we're seeing in media, right? Like, I got interviewed for this TV thing recently, and before I met them, I was like, just so you know, I'm plus size. Is that a problem for you? And the response from the casting director was, why would that be a problem? And I said, how many fat people do you see on television who aren't sad or trying to lose weight?
Yep. That's another thing that actually Daniel and I were talking about on the way over here, about how, like, you know, 2 years ago I was thinner than I am now, and now I am more, now I am plus size, like, and that's fine, but, like, to other people who knew me when I was smaller, and I have a feeling that in their minds I'm 30 pounds away from being Maureen again, and which is, like, and, like,
I'm laughing because I'm like, I isn't, like, somehow you lost you.
Exactly. Right?
But that's also something, like, that The Biggest Loser tells us, right? Yeah. Like, how many times do they, like, they parade those, I always, one of the things that has always annoyed me about that show is that when you are still, quote unquote, fat, you have to wear a sports bra and shorts.
That.
And the moment you lose enough weight, they give you a fucking tank top, right? like somehow, like it, because it's purposely done to shame them.
Yeah.
Right? Into, like,
I never thought about that.
Yeah, I was like,
that's amazing, though.
Fuck,
not amazing, you know.
But, like, but it is this, they're always told, like, you're finding yourself again, and da da da. And you know what? I don't want to negate anyone's individual experience, yeah, in the sense of, like, you know, we all walk through life with different things, and sometimes we do lose ourselves, but that doesn't have to be always tied to your weight.
Yeah. I mean, like, you could be going through just a really shit time and lose yourself. You could be in a job that makes you, that's like part of a corporate machine, and you lose yourself to that.
Correct.
I mean, and so it's just, it's like upsetting to me that, like.
But what you have just described are all health and wellness issues.
Yeah.
And they might end up becoming a weight issue.
Right.
Like, in the sense of it might be reflected in your weight.
Mm-hmm.
But they are health and wellness issues on a greater scale, right? But we just conflate weight with health, period.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, if you are plus size, you must be unhealthy. Like, mm-hmm, that these are, like, somehow, like, an SAT vocab problem, right? Like, if then, you know, like, and that's just not the case. And actually, there's quite a bit of science now that's pointing towards the fact that that's not the case. I don't know if you saw that New York Times article I posted about the Biggest Loser people, where they are studying them because all of them, almost all of them.
I don't know if I saw it when you shared it, but I have seen that, because,
yeah,
it has something to do with, like, that losing that much weight that quickly, like, completely fucks up their metabolism.
Correct.
Right?
And they, yeah, so even though they're burning the same amount of calories, they're gaining back, like, literally 100 of those pounds, because their cortisol levels and their, like, all of the levels in their bodies are just so confused.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we do ourselves a disservice in saying, you are bad, you are wrong. And especially, like, for women, it's even more complicated. And this is something I talk quite a bit about in life, that there is always a disconnect, especially as you're coming through puberty and doing the thing where you start dating people and you start, like, figuring out what relationships are, where publicly these words fat and ugly get lumped together, and,
yeah,
you're just told how unattractive you are. And privately, every dude wants to fuck you. And, like, you get all of these crazy, creepy, fetishy emails. And, like, I don't know, 15, 16-year-olds, they don't have the emotional vocabulary to understand this difference, right? Yeah. Like, to understand or have the ability to say, no, I will not be your secret. I will not be the fat secret you keep. Like, yeah. Either you want to be with me because you like me as a person and, you know, and this is, we're not even talking about, like, this is by no means any form of shaming of, like, if you just want to do a one-off with someone or whatever.
Yeah.
It's that there is this thing where we are told publicly how unattractive we are.
There was that Louis episode that tackled that, where there was, Louis was being pursued by this plus-size woman, and he, like, what she was like, smart, funny, down to earth, like every, like, you know, checking every box, I guess. And she was plus size, and he was like hesitant to go out on a date with her. And so then they like hung out, and she had to like guilt him into it being a date,
right?
Which at first I was like, this shit is so goddamn problematic. Like, I hate this. But then she went off on that whole speech.
It was like a 7-minute monologue. Yeah. Like, I remember seeing that part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fresh enough in my mind where I remember having some issues still with it, but I wrote something about it, but I can't remember what I wrote. But it was just still like, first, I think I had pointed out that he had already slept with a plus size woman in the series.
Yeah.
He had, like, there had been an establishment of that.
Yeah.
And it's also that, like, disconnect where, like, dudes think they can get anyone. Yeah. You know, like, I don't, like, or, like, somehow, you know, because I abide no bullshit on dating websites, like, zero. I don't know if you saw the thing I posted where.
I did. That.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I abide none of your bullshit.
Oh, my God.
So. Like, the follow-up message when he, because I, what I posted, his follow-up message was, well, you should be grateful I even liked you. And I was like, do you think you're the only person sending me this message today? like, let's put this in perspective. Like, I'm like, what is that disconnect for you? Like, do you think you're the only one? I'm like, I'm a whole porn category. Of course there are more of you. Like, no.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Okay, well, I would love to talk more about the collective. Yeah.
So, there is an actress in town named Mari Marroquin, and she and I have talked about this quite a bit because we are both members of Barrel of Monkeys, which is an educational theater company in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And she has transitioned to doing a lot of voiceover work, partially because it's convenient for her life because she has a kid and, like, you know.
Yeah. You don't have to leave.
Yes, correct. But partially because it grows increasingly difficult to walk into rooms where you are just not invited, not welcomed. Even, like, seeing certain shows. Like, I saw a show recently in Chicago, which I will not publicly name, but I walked in and was like, there is not one person who is not the same exact body type in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a show that in theory should be a celebration of different body types. It should be a celebration of different things. And I was like, and I felt uncomfortable. I felt unwelcomed and unwanted in that space, even seeing it. Like, and, you know, maybe some of that is my own stuff that I'm projecting, but I really don't think so because I'm pretty mindful of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I feel like you have created a show that is not welcoming of others,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is terribly ironic for what the show was. I also have seen The Wiz, which is the show Co-Candy is doing right now, twice in the last week and a half. And it was the most inviting space I've ever been into. And I was like, oh my God. Because it wasn't just like, it's not just a fat, thin thing. It's like a different bodies being represented thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're not even just categorically saying fat, thin. It's like, everyone has a different body shape and that's cool. And yeah. It's like praised and it's put on that stage. I mean, I could go on about how great The Wiz is, but like that, I mean, the production of The Wiz that is happening in Chicago right now. But one of the things I took away was, like, I felt welcomed.
Yeah.
I felt welcomed into that space, like my body belonged there. Mm. And so Mari and I started talking, and I was like, you know what? We should actually just do it. We should just do it. We should start this theater company for plus size people. And I was like, I don't, because everyone I know is super busy, right? We're all doing all the things. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the beauties of Chicago, that while you might be like, oh, smell right, I'm gonna get paid. Mm-hmm. You can still do all the things, right? Yeah. So my goal is that we will do 2 shows a year. One will be either like a storytelling or devised work about plus size people and plus size bodies and what our experience is in the world, because this is something most people, everyone has at least one fat friend, and most people have never stopped to ask, what is it like being the biggest person in a room?
Right.
What is it like being the person who everyone sees and no one sees simultaneously? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, because that's a big thing where, like, you are just not, you, they look at you and then they immediately stop looking at you. Right? Yeah. Like,
yep.
Things like that, where it's a real specific experience where you're just like, oh, I'm not invited here. I'm not welcomed here. I'm not part of whatever this is. Right? Yeah. And it's not hard to see when you're that person. Yeah. Right? So I want to do 1 show a year that's that. And then I want to do 1 show a year that is like a normal play, like a normal straight play, that is just cast with an all plus size cast.
Which,
because believe it or not, people do love us. Yeah. We can be love interests, yeah. Right? Like,
no. So I was just, Nanetta in, Main Street's,
which is the company that Falstaff. I met you from.
Yes.
When we did the console.
Which, can I tell you, one of the greatest moments of my life, when that review came out, when the review, when they said how feminine I was like, they called a big girl feminine. That's right?
You also, like, murdered that.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was real happy with the work I did, right?
It was phenomenal.
Thank you.
Like,
thank you.
Yeah, and I'd make a point to not, like, do that all the time, like go into a thing of like, let me celebrate your performance for a second, but like, let me celebrate your performance for a second.
That was a work that I had a really interesting, should be in quotes, childhood, in that by the time I was 16, I was no longer living with my parents. I was living alone. I was working a full-time job and doing my last 2 years of high school full-time. Magda is a character that just resonates, like, to my core. That, like, feeling of entrapment, that mm-hmm. feeling of, like, I mean, you know, there was just nothing about her that didn't sort of hit something for me. And so she was easy to fall into. But, you know, when Oliver was, like, it was so feminine and lovely, I was like, oh, look at me being a lady in this gray jumpsuit. Like, you know, where, because it was like, I've had a director say to me, like, I was doing a scene. Oh, that's my phone. I'm sorry.
Oh, I know.
Someone in Colorado is trying to get a hold of me. go away, Colorado Springs, for a lot of reasons. Yep. Although, okay, I have worked with an opera company there that I love everyone who is a part of it. Colorado Springs is a really interesting place because it probably no more than anywhere else in the world embodies the polarization of, yeah, like the World Pagan Festival happens in Manitou, which is the town literally like next to Colorado Springs, which you're like, oh, no one would tell you that, right? Yeah. Like, yeah.
My mom went to a funeral in Colorado Springs, and it was at one of the Colorado Springs mega churches, mm-hmm. and it was an experience that she won't soon forget.
I mean, so I moved to Colorado Springs to sing with this company in 2006. And my first week in Colorado Springs, the Episcopal Church was literally stolen. And you might ask yourself, how does a church get stolen? Well, let me tell you. Basically, the pastor had been put on a suspension because they were suspicious that he had been embezzling money. He had. They proved that he had been embezzling money. He went to Kenya in the 3 months he was on suspension and got like ordained in the like Anglican Sakina Church and came back and said, they're not, the Episcopals are not firing me because I embezzled money. They're firing me because I have a different belief on homosexuality than they do, right? Because the Episcopals are affirming as fuck. So he had the board drain the bank accounts in the middle of the night and change the locks. So he literally stole a church. And I was like, where the fuck did I just move? Like, I'm from Chicago. How am I here? Like, what is happening? All I want to do is sing, you know, the Mother and Hansel and Gretel and, like, get that paycheck. But where am I? Like, oh yeah. So, collective. Yes. So, like, coming back around. Sorry, I'm very tangential.
No, nature. That is the right concept of our show. I think when we were like, we'll do a radio show, it's like, well, it's got to be at least 50 minutes. Because, like, we're going to go places and, you know, right. We got to come back eventually.
Yes.
We need the time to come back.
Yes. You know? I was about to quote Dr. Seuss, and then I was like, no, I just found out he's a racist. And now I can't. Now I'm like, check yourself.
Isn't it terrible when you find out that someone whose work you really respect turns out to be a horrible goddamn person?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about that on the show a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple people like that for me lately. Like, there was a leftist community, there was a really famous comedian, who had a political radio show that was like a daily show, podcast really. And he ended up being, an emotionally manipulative, having an affair dude.
Who was this?
Jamie Kilstein.
I was thinking of someone else. I was thinking of the dude.
Isn't that sad that you could be thinking of someone else?
Yeah.
That is a multiply applicable thing.
Yes. I mean, there is an article that was floating around that I did not actually read, so perhaps I shouldn't be discussing it. But I know the general gist of it was, beware of the male feminist in wolf's clothing, essentially, right?
Like, it might actually have been related to the thing I'm talking about, because I think that came out around the same couple days. Like, there might have been another guy that, I don't know, I thought I saw, because I know I saw that article.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was like...
And I was like, oh, this is describing my ex to a T.
Shit. Yeah. Well.
So, collective. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, someone was like, well, do plus size people just stop acting? Do they just stop doing it? And I'm like, we stop being invited into those spaces. There is a difference, right? It's not like collectively every fat person was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Goodbye, right? Like, it's like, no. How many times can I walk into a room and know that they do not care that I'm there?
And how many artist applications do I have to fill out where they ask me for my weight?
Correct. And how many times do I have to see Hedy Weiss write something about, like, real women bodies and how the costumer did such a good job with a size 10, right? Like, because when we talk about that, I'm like, she who reviews, like, every play in Chicago can't even handle a size 10. What is she going to think when my body enters that stage, right? Like... her and her scrunchie. She wears a scrunchie to, like, everything. You know when you're like, I just want to cut that scrunchie out of your hair, girl. I'm going to give you some help and cut that scrunchie out. Like, what is that perception, right? Because here's the thing. I walk through the world being really content in who I am and also being more painfully magnified of what other people think of me, right? Like having to constantly be reminded what other people think of me. So it has nothing to do with my self-confidence. Like, I feel confident in who I am.
Yeah.
But I have to, like, go walk into spaces where I always am playing defense just for my existence.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that my body belongs there, that my body is worthy, that my body has its place, you know, like, and that is exhausting, right? Like, that, like, I shouldn't have to show up and... like, I mean, there are companies that I know make people sign contracts saying they'll lose 50 pounds before they do a role. And I'm like, you know, that in theory sounds great, but, like, there's a lot that goes into weight loss that isn't just calories in, calories out.
Yeah.
And, like, it should not, my ability to sing, my ability to do my job is not dependent on my weight.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and in many cases, people who lose weight, like, specifically singers who lose weight, it negatively affects
their voice. Because they have a whole new mechanism. They have a whole new breathing mechanism. They have a whole new, like, I mean, especially when we talk about, like, weight loss surgery, right? Like, that surgery is still very dangerous. It still has a lot of complications. And if you need it, I support, you know, I never don't want to seem supportive in what people are deciding. It is their life. I will gladly stand behind someone's decision. But for someone like myself, who I have low blood sugar, low blood pressure, I have, like, no reason to go get that surgery that would put my life in actual danger.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? Like, it would be solely aesthetic for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get that surgery solely for an aesthetic reason, I know I'm not content with myself in the moment I'm living currently because of an aesthetic reason. And for me, I just made a decision a long time ago that I would not put up with that.
Mm.
That I would walk through the world being me.
Yeah.
And that my weight was part of being me, and that I would not apologize for that.
Yeah.
Because I do not feel the need to apologize for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is really interesting to me, because I feel like it kind of ties into something we were talking about in the car, which also has a lot to do with, like, the entire concept of intersectionality. And again, I'm going to preface with, this is the white straight cis man trying to talk about intersectionality. So if this isn't accurate or, like, wrong, please write into the show. Please tell me right now.
If you're wrong right now, we'll tell you.
Great. Well, so I think that it's really interesting, the idea of identification. And I think that the really powerful thing about it is, like, taking who you are now and, like, expressing that. And I also think that really ties into something that you guys were talking about earlier, which is it's really important to, like, I think when we're, like, entering these, like, intersectionality discussions, I think the most important thing is letting someone else, like, decide what their identification is. And enforcing an identification on a person is, like, terrible. And I think that is kind of...
I mean, we see that everywhere in the trans community, right?
Absolutely.
Right? Like,
yeah.
People who are gender fluid or, you know, gender queer, where they should be driving how they identify, right?
Right.
Like, including, like, pronouns that they use, including, mm-hmm. you know, it's why we think we should legislate people's bodies,
yeah.
right? And we can talk about that with intersectionality, whether it be trans people and bathrooms mm-hmm. or women and the ability to not have a child, right? Like,
yeah.
whether that even be, like, just, like, access to affordable health care.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just language policing.
Yes.
Where talking about, like, oh, I don't want to adapt the language that I use to be inclusive to trans people. Like, I don't want to learn to call myself cis.
Then
it's
you're
like,
just an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Like, really, at the end
right.
of the day,
yeah.
like, it takes you very little time, right? Like,
to understand what the word cis means.
Correct. It
yeah.
takes you very little time and very little energy and very little effort. And when we talk about statistics of especially trans women of color being murdered,
mm-hmm.
that is a group of people that, like, the word brave is a tricky word, right?
Yeah.
But, like, when you are living that truth, knowing that statistic,
yeah,
that is actually brave.
Yeah.
Right? Knowing that, like, that it's, you know, I have, yeah, at some point it was like 1 in 5 trans women of color will be killed.
Yeah.
Well, it honestly might be worse, because I keep seeing, there seems to be more and more statistics of that happening. Ever since it's like, that's what we were talking to somebody about trans issues. We were saying it seems like it's the front line right now.
Yeah.
And I think that in March so far, possibly just in Chicago, I think 3 so far.
I think it was nationally.
Nationally?
Three.
Thank
three,
God.
Yes.
I'm glad that I'm wrong about that statistic.
One was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just, it's also like, why... Why do people care so much in the, that's a tricky wording. Why do people have such an aversion
yeah.
to, like, just treating people with the respect they're asking for?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
yeah.
what inherently in you is such an asshole that you just cannot handle that? right? Yeah. Like,
yeah. And that, and I mean, that goes to every marginalized group of people asking for respect. It goes to the homosexual community. It goes to the trans community. It goes to the plus size community of like, why can't you just let me live my life?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, right. And maybe it's fear, which like, get over it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you know, I honestly think it's fear.
It has to, I mean, I think that is a large part of it. I think it has to be more than just that. It's white colonialism is so fucking fragile that the invitation of any other threatens it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like, which I again, we are three white people sitting in a room.
Yeah.
You know, like I recognize that I am only so qualified to discuss these topics, but to me, white fragility is astounding. It is astounding, right? Like, do you know who Ricky Gamboa is?
No.
Ricky Gamboa, Ricardo Gamboa is, he wrote and co-directed Brujos, which is, We Are Open TV is a group in Chicago that basically is making some of the greatest art that is coming out of this city. It is for trans, gay, and brown and black people, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they made the web series Brown Girls, which got a lot of traction, and then they also helped make Brujos. And Ricky, who wrote it and stars in it and co-directed it, is like one of the smartest people you'll ever meet. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, and he also just takes no fucking bullshit, which is just a dream in a human. and he, I actually sang in Brujos. So I'm in the fourth episode. Cool. And the whole premise of the show is it's about a coven of gay Latino grad students who are also witches. So,
well, yeah, Brujo is Spanish for witch.
Yes, correct, yeah. Correct. So, and it's all about these new colonizers basically trying to kill the witches for white domination, right? And he, at the premiere, is in the process of getting his PhD from that program in NYU that actually brought us the word intersectionality.
Okay.
Mm. And he, was talking about the five genocides that led to white supremacy, right? Like the genocide of the Moorish people of North Africa, and one of them was the genocide of the indigenous people of the Americas, and one of them was the genocide of the pagan women in Europe, right? Like, mm-hmm. like there are five things that point to how white supremacy came to be. And one of the things I think about constantly in work that I do or work that I am thinking about, like, especially for opera singers, which we have, because the Fox system, like, I don't feel the need ever to be an Aida.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I think my voice could do it. Personally, I've just made the choice. I don't think I should do it. Right. But that's because I know I walk through the world with white privilege, because every white person in this country has benefited from white supremacy, and that is just a true statement.
Yep.
And the quicker we say that, and we say the word supremacy, right? Like, and that's not to say that everyone we know is a supremacist, but like that we have all benefited from white supremacy.
Well, I think recognizing that there are multiple layers to white supremacy is also important, because of course there's like the most apparent, most like reprehensible facet of it, which is like the KKK and like outright lynching and things like that. But like,
which punch all those motherfuckers in the face.
Punch
all of them.
All of them.
Always punch Nazis.
Always punch Nazis.
Big on punching Nazis.
Always be punching Nazis.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video of "And I Will Always Love You" when he was getting punched in the face, but like it was like at the key change, boom, boom. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Ah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh
my
God. And I think I posted it and was like, well, I am a pretty anti-violence person in my personal life because I grew up in a very violent home.
Mm-hmm.
Every Nazi deserves to be punched in the face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like this.
Like, 100%. Like, were you a gender bender? Mm-mm. Oh. My, I sang A Mes Amis.
Okay.
And, my slideshow was all about, I turned it into about punching Nazis. So every high C I sang was a different picture of a superhero punching a Nazi.
Yes.
It was great.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. The other thing I wanted to say on that whole, that layers of white supremacy is like respectability politics is also white supremacy. Oh. Maybe it's not like, you know, as blatantly obvious as like genocide, but it is entirely like, or fetishizing like curly hair, or you know, or things like that.
I mean, there are so many ways for people to be assholes, right?
Yeah.
Like it's sort of astounding when we think about, like, I don't know. I think about the generation that's sort of under us, right? I mean, you guys are younger than I am, but even the generation under us, they are now being raised with a level of awareness that I hope prevents the fuckery that we are currently in from happening when they can vote.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's just a different level of wokeness, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. And I'm hoping that ends up becoming, like, I don't know, there was a town hall meeting with Nancy Pelosi.
I think I know what you're talking about. The guy that came up and talked about democratic socialism.
Yes!
Yeah, and he was like, maybe do you think there's any chance the Democratic Party will recognize that capitalism isn't working? And she was like, we're a capitalist party.
No.
And anyone else that says that is wrong. And
which she is like just was aggressively. Don't you understand that this is part of, you are not appealing to the people who would be more liberal,
right?
Like, when you shut that down,
you actively become not the party of the people.
Correct.
Like, where, like, the Democratic Party is supposed to be founded on that. I'm like, reaching out to minorities, reaching out to the working class, and in action, post, leading up to and post 45 being elected, that is not what the Democratic Party has been doing.
I mean, we live in a country that places the value of a dollar over the value of people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And until that changes, and how that changes, I don't really know. And it keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
Until I put my book, there's a book that's written for children by a Swede called The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep. Like, at my real bad nights, I'm like, put on that children's book, Jesse. Yeah. You need to go to bed. But until somehow we have a reckoning, right? Like, which is like, the terrible irony is all of these evangelicals who think they're so Christian, who are doing things that are so fundamentally, like, whether or not you believe in God and Christ, fundamentally against the archetype of Christ that is laid out in that book, right? Like, fundamentally against what Christ is represented as in that book.
Mm-hmm.
If you're reading it as like an academic text, you know, like, Jesus was like, as you treat the least of these is how you treat me. Jesus is like, you know, like, give to the poor. And evangelicals are like, no thanks.
I was listening to a podcast today that was talking about the entire concept of pro-life, where it's like, you're not pro-life if you're pro-war.
Yeah.
Like, you are not pro-life if you are not pro-affordable health.
You're also not pro-life if you prevent a woman from having a life-saving procedure.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not, you're maybe pro-birth, more pro-women being incubation. You're like pro-women being incubation chambers, basically.
Yeah. But that is also part of how women are oppressed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Women cannot have autonomy if you do not, like, if women... Birth control led to women having autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Birth control led to women not having to be baby factories, right? Yeah. And science has proven that, like, men can't even take the same drugs, not because it wouldn't do the same thing, but because they do not have the ability to make it through a fucking trial, right?
Yeah.
For the same exact side effects women deal with constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, like, do you know, so scientists at Oxford just did the first, like, big research on the measurable amount of pain a woman experiences with period cramps. It is equatable to a heart attack. A woman makes it through the amount of pain you have when you have a heart attack 5 days a month, every month during her childbearing years, and you think we're weak.
Really?
Right? Like, I'm like, no, no. Women are fucking strong as fuck, right? Yeah. Like,
that weirdly makes me feel better about, like, for some reason I have, like, that weird, maybe hypochondriacal thing of, like, one day I'm going to have a heart attack, and I've been afraid of that. And, like, that actually made me feel better about it for some reason.
I, like and read I, that I, data. That
might also just be me as a man being like, oh, well. That was both the worst thing and the worst thing I could have said, I think, now that I'm really thinking about it.
Like, yeah. I was like, well,
anyway, so let's I want to talk more. We have a few minutes left.
If you ever have a heart attack, I want your thought to be like, this is what a woman deals with every month. Yeah.
I think I actually, like, made the fear of heart attacks worse just now.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Good. So I actually, we have a few minutes left. I really want to talk about your upcoming projects because we usually give a minute, but you have a bunch. So tell us about it.
So I am doing a concert at the store over on Halsted and Armitage, March 31st at 8 p.m. That is a recreation of Brandi Carlile's The Story album with a couple of other songs. And that is with a group of people that I work with pretty regularly. The last one we did was a TV theme song show night. Mm-hmm. And that's free to the public. So you should come on down. And then I have something in the works for the summer, which I'm not allowed to talk about yet.
It's so secret.
It's so secretive.
But keep an eye out, probably.
Yes, yes.
Well, so how about, where can people, like, get all their Jesse Oliver fix?
JesseOliver.net.
Cool. Cool, cool.
And then my teaching page on Facebook, which is Jessica Oliver voice. I forget which one, but it's up there. That's pretty much it. And then there's also Lady Business, which is an organization that Ashley Hargrave and Kate Leslie and I run, where we raise money for different charities. So we did one a couple weeks ago in the beginning of February that we raised $5,000 for Planned Parenthood and Chicago Women's Health Center.
No. Jesus Christ.
Really? And then the next one we're going to do, hopefully will be in June. We need to sit down and plan things, but I know we're going to do it for ACLU and for an organization called Distributing with Dignity, which buys tampons, pads, bras, deodorant for homeless women.
That's so cool.
So the goal is to like do them every couple of months and just to keep raising money for things that are on the chopping block. Who knows? Maybe Meals with Wheels will be the third one because our president just cut the budget for Meals on Wheels. Yeah. God damn it.
Well, so, and when is the next event for that coming up? Because we'll make sure to have you on for that
too. That will be June, probably. Cool. June or July. So when we have those details ironed out, I'll get them to you. Yeah.
That would be wonderful. No, because like, we could talk to you for like hours.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, because generally we... We usually say this not on the record, but like I'm gonna do it this time so the people know. If people have stuff upcoming and projects and stuff like that, please reach out to us. Like, and I'm telling you, like, if whenever you have a thing upcoming, let us know. Open invite to come on the show and talk about it because like we're always looking for more things to, you know, promote and have on the show and talk with. And you know, we do our recurring segment, the QYO, which stands for Questionable Internet Opinions, and that's super fun. But we also really like it when we're able to like actually provide other perspectives and stuff like that. Like, I think that's kind of our bread and butter for this show, is doing that.
Oh, also, if your listeners have not watched Brujos, they should watch Brujos.
I
am in the fourth episode of that, so you can hear me sing. Basically, the email I got was like, I want you to sing opera like The Little Mermaid. And I was like, okay, mom. So, but I didn't know, like, the pianist is someone I know, but I didn't know what I could throw in front of him. So I gave him Porgy Amor, and I'm basically standing in the back just singing it on like nonsensical vowels, like not even singing the words. I'm just like a fat mermaid floating. I love it.
Cool. Oh, wait, so you're in the show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Yeah. That's, and is that awesome, so people can find that on too. Netflix?
No, it's or on
my.
It's on. We Are Open TV thinking. For sure. You can get it there. So, cool. Which is that great group in Chicago that's producing incredible, incredible web series. They also have Brown Girls, which you should watch because it's just really, really good. So nice. Cool. But Brujos made like the New York Times trending thing the other day, and I was like, oh, so many people are gonna see me as a fat mermaid singing Mozart. Cool.
Oh my god. Oh, that's fucking great.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
And I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to check out more of what we're up to, if you want to see our articles, old and new, there hasn't been much new lately, but there will be soon. You can head over to scopymag.com. You can find us on Scopy Magazine. You can hear on about...
Facebook.
Yep, on Facebook. You can hear all about Maureen's Irish festivities of... drinking tea and eating Irish soda bread that we got from Claire DeVizio. Shout out Claire's Ovens. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at ScopyMag. I think that's my stuff.
Cool. So I just want to emphasize again the importance of donations. We run on a zero budget. We have so many ideas of different things that we want to do, but we can't do it without your help. So we're in the works of trying to figure out something that we can offer as an incentive for like a limited amount of time for new monthly subscribers, because, you know, we're endlessly appreciative of people who make a commitment to as little as $5 a month to help us out and help us kind of build our network. And we want to be able to give something back. So we're working on something and we'll announce it soon. But if you head to scopymag.com and go to our About section, you can either become a monthly subscriber, in which case you will eventually get a thing, or experience or something.
Mystery.
And who knows? And we'll also give you a shout out on the show. And if you do a one-time donation, we'll send you a handwritten thank you note in the mail. Yeah, give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Yep, thanks so much for listening. And go out and make something.
Yep.